Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
So welcome to the show today, listeners. I'm so very excited because I have a guest here that I've been trying to connect with for a really long time this summer, ever since I found her blog. I kind of mentioned her once before because our license plates support her organization, which is AERO, which stands for Alternative Energy Resources Organization. And we've had these plates, I think, since 2010 when I first got my new little car that I drive. And I just love them. So my guest today is Jennifer Hill Hart. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I got it now. Okay. So, and you go ahead and tell us about your organization.
Great. No worries. I'm the executive director of AERO, Alternative Energy Resources Organization. We've been around, this our 41st year. We're a statewide grassroots nonprofit in Montana dedicated to growing sustainable communities. We have done a variety of programs over the years. We started out in the energy crisis in the 70s, when a lot of environmental nonprofits or other groups were working to fight fossil fuel development, but no one was really talking about alternatives, in the proactive side of changing how we power our systems. And so AERO got started by a group of folks who wanted to help show people how they can say yes to alternatives. And so we took off from there and started out doing this new Western energy show where they travel to communities and parked their bus and did a bunch of skits on renewable energy and why it was important. They worked on education curriculum and policy work at the legislature. And then they grew to start doing workshops and research opportunities. One of our big programs that came out in the 80s is called Farm Improvement Clubs, where we had a big foundation that gave us some money to give mini grants to farmers to do research on basically organic gardening, organic farming methods, and then so they could find out ways to convert their conventional farms to organic. And then they would report back to the membership on what worked and what parts of the state and what didn't and what they learned from it. Because at that time, no one was really funding that kind of research. So that was those are some pivotal programs in changing the organic farming landscape in the state of Montana. There's actually a great book about it called The Lentil Underground, written by Liz Carlisle, talking about our farmers and how they use that program and started this the food business, Timeless Foods, Timeless Seeds, by growing lentils and chickpeas and that kind of stuff. So very exciting. It's a little D in democracy, people getting together and coming up with programs that they want to do. And so we picked up Sustainable Ag because of just the trend of fossil fuels driving how people have to farm these days. And in an effort to save the family farm, how can we make it more affordable by not having to use chemical fertilizers and petroleum-based fertilizers and pesticides, and find a way that we can grow food in a way that aligns with our values and that works with the planet, with the environment, and not against it.
Awesome. The one thing I was going to say was when I was looking at the website, I saw that you're having coming up the annual meeting, and
yes,
that the woman Liz Carlisle who wrote that Lentil Underground is going to be a speaker there, right?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, Liz has been traveling around the country actually with David Oyen, one of the main protagonists in the story. He's the runs Timeless Seeds, and they've been touring around talking about that book, and she's going to be one of our keynote speakers. Every year we have an annual meeting, and at that annual meeting we do workshops and have people talk about what they've been doing in their communities, so you kind of see a hands-on experience for sustainable farming, agriculture, or renewable energy. We have people come talk about how they put put up a community greenhouse or solar panels on their house, or how they converted their old home to make it more energy efficient. And so we do that every year. And this year, our we're calling it an expo, an annual meeting, because it's not just a meeting. It's actually, you know, more workshops and some fun stuff. We actually have a really good time. It's kind of like a camp for the weekend. But we're going to be at the Arrow Peak Lodge outside of Great Falls, Montana. It's the Montana Farmers Union Lodge out there. And it's September 25th through 27th. And we're going to have lodging, and it starts on Friday with farm tours and a tour of Straw Bale House. And all of this is up on our website at www.aeromt.org. But that night, so we start on Friday, and we have Sarah Calhoun from Red Ants Pants is actually going to be our opening keynote.
I saw that too.
Very exciting, very exciting. And it's a very inspirational story to tell. And Liz will be there as well. It'll be our closing keynote to talk about the Lentil Underground, but also changing, why it's so important to change food systems in our country, how we buy food, how we eat food, how we grow food. And all day Saturday we'll have some workshops, some really interesting workshops and panels, and there'll be Q&A time, also time for people to mingle. That Saturday night we will have... we have a live auction every year. It's pretty exciting. There's going to be a mixer with new farmers meeting seasoned farmers.
Ooh,
farmers
nice.
Have been farming for a long time. And we're also going to have live music provided by a local yokel, this band who was just voted best new band in Missoula.
Ooh.
It's a fun bluegrass band. So.
Cool. I think I'm definitely going to try to come.
Oh, good, good.
For sure.
It really is so much fun. It's such a great group of people. I mean, they're really, Arrow's made up of folks who really do just live their values in their daily lives. This is a quote by a longtime member, Dave Oyn, not sure exactly of his title, but I think CEO or something close of Timeless Foods, and he just always says Arrow lets people live their values in their daily lives, and you really do see people practicing what they preach at these meetings and sharing that information with everyone. So, and then we have a big party.
Cool. Excellent. That sounds like my husband living your values in your daily lives. So, and that's what we try to do here. You probably don't know much about us, but we just dug a big well last year. So we're just barely, I call my husband, I say he planted the mini farm this year. So we're just, you know, not anywhere ready to start selling produce or anything yet. And just beginning. I mean, he's been gardening for many, many, like over 40 years. We've had our place here for 20, well, you're married 23 years this year, and he was here before me, but we've always had very little water. We just had a shallow well up until last year. So be fun to learn from other people who have done it. You know, like this year, he's kind of experimenting to see if what it would take to grow for like to have CSA shares and for the market and things. So, yeah. Great. All right. Well, did you want to say more about that? Do you want to talk about the tour you've been on this summer, or do you want me to go through some of the questions and talk about your garden and we'll do the tour at the end, or where do you want to go?
Yeah, well, I could just keep,
cool, keep going.
I'll talk a little bit more about the expo.
Excellent.
Just maybe a little bit what we're doing there, but let me just pull up my agenda so I get the titles right, but it's just a really great opportunity for people to meet people, engage at least, well.
And a lot of my guests on the show talk about that's how they've learned, and it's one of the most valuable ways to learn. So, and since a lot of my listeners are in Montana, I'm definitely going to encourage everyone to go to that expo. Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. It's just a good balance of, you know, learning a lot of stuff and being a lot of fun. So I guess I'll just talk up the tours on Friday. They're going to start in the morning, probably around 9, and they're just, you know, depending on the tour, how, you know, might be a couple of hours, but we set them up so that when people are driving in to the annual meeting, they can go on a tour on their way in. So we've got Timeless Foods and Prairie Heritage Farm, the Kogels up there, and then Commit Organic, There's Straw Bale House and then Gardens from Garbage in Great Falls.
Did you say Gardens from Garbage?
Yeah.
Cool, I like that.
Yeah, that's this is this really great project from this gentleman named Mike Dalton. Has this program where he took this basically abandoned lot and put up garden boxes and helped grow. He's helping grow food in the area, and he's working with kids at what is it called? Boys and Girls Club and a senior center, and they all come out there and work for food, and the kids grow the food, and not work for food, excuse me, the kids grow the food, and then they learn how it grows and how to, you know, keep the vegetables happy, and they harvest the food and they eat it, and then they give it to other folks in the community. It's this the West Side Orchard Garden. It's a really cool, really great concept, and kids love it.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then how does the senior center fit into it?
Meals on Wheels, I believe, is they deliver food to Meals on Wheels. Nice. Most of the food is given to Head Start, Boys and Girls Club, and Meals on Wheels.
Awesome.
I think about more than I pull up his website, but more than 800 meals for kids in the area, about 4,000 pounds of food each year, each summer. So, yeah, Mike's a great guy. He's someone you'll want to interview if you haven't already.
Okay. No, and I'm always looking for guests.
So, yeah, so that's one of the farm tours that we have.
Okay.
It's not a farm, but, you know, it's a way of changing the local food system. You know, you're engaging kids, which, you know, they need to be a part of this conversation or else anything that we do isn't going to make a difference. So, and that's all on Friday morning. And then we have a little lentil cooking demonstration with Claudia's Mesa. Claudia's been traveling around the state talking up lentils, and she's working on her own cookbook to help people eat lentils. And then we have Sarah Calhoun talking that night. And then the next day we have a couple activities in the expo. There's one, it's called Cottage Food and You. We have this new law that passed in Montana that helps individuals sell food products that they make.
Oh.
And there are certain restrictions to it because of
food. Oh, right, like the eggs and honey and things?
Right, correct, yeah. So we're going to talk to people about what that means and let them know like what they can use and what they have to do in order to get there. But it's a really great opportunity for people who are growing food. At whatever scale, if you want to sell it, you know, in a different, you know, not just straight from the garden, if you want to make some food products, you know, to add to your income sources, this is a really great way to do it. And then we'll have another panel on how to finance your food and energy projects. So if you want to do some kind of food business or if you want to step it up from gardening to actually, you know, selling food, if you want to look into how to get a solar panel or, you know, at whatever scale in your house or your business, or if you want to look into energy efficiency options, you know, where can you get funding for that? And then, you know, what's that process look like? So we'll give you some resources. We have some experts, you know, in those areas coming in, but also an opportunity to ask Q&A directly with the people. I'll kind of wrap up the expo. People can check it out on our website, but one activity I'm really excited about is that we're on Sunday morning we're having regional roundtables, basically where people this is something that our members have asked for a while. As more local food or energy, you know, citizens groups have popped up, people are finding that they all have the same ideas, but maybe they're not connecting as well. They don't have the opportunity to really get together and talk about, you know, how they can share resources or collaborate. So we're doing regional roundtables on Sunday morning, and we're letting people divide up into regions and talk about, you know, what they're doing in their community and see if they can find ways to set, you know, big goals for how they want to make their communities more sustainable and, you know, go from there, you know, and maybe identify some low-hanging fruit so they can have some projects. But we're finding, and I'm finding this on my tour, that a lot of people are wanting to do some really great things in Montana, and there's so many nonprofits, people who are starting to have more and more aligned missions, that getting them to connect together and collaborate will give everyone a more united front in order to change, you know, how we power our communities and how we grow our food. I think that's going to be a really exciting workshop.
That sounds just, I love everything about it. I love the whole collaboration piece and the people working together. Like, I don't know, since I've started this podcast, I've learned so much. Like, I just started it in February, but some of the things I've really been thinking about is, like, instead of, like, going, I don't know, and it might be totally crazy, this is the first time I've ever said it, but instead of everybody protesting Monsanto, how can we change? And I just went and saw this speech by Bill McDormand last week. He was down in Kalispell talking about saving seeds. And there was just something that he said that sparked that idea in my head. And also, I had talked to a farmer in New York, and he kind of, like, also made something click when he talked about how his dad... He remembers when his dad or his grandfather came home and was so excited when they first came out with Roundup, and it was like this great thing. And they're like, oh my God, we're never going to have to deal with weeds anymore. And it was just like this exciting revolutionary time for them. And they were looking at it as this great benefit. And I don't know. I've just been thinking more. And, you know, Mother Teresa was always like, I don't ever invite me to anti-war protest thing, but I will come to a peace, pro-peace rally any day. I'm pretty sure it was Mother Teresa that said that. And just trying to, you know, think more about how can we change? Because I always find that, you know, Republican, Democrat, whoever you are, there's always some kind of commonality. Like, even though I'm a passionate, you know, left liberal Democrat, you know, I have tons of friends who are Republicans. I live in Montana. I think they kind of have accepted me at this point. And, you know, I just think we need it. You know, everybody loves the planet. Every, you know, there's very few people who don't really care about our planet. And it's just finding that common ground. And to me, that's like a great way to share and collaborate and to meet people and work together.
Yes. Sorry. And I think that's one thing that Arrow has always done really successfully. Like, we don't talk about, you know, partisan, you know, politics. I mean, we definitely do support certain policies more than others, but it's all with the theme of sustainability. And I think one of the reasons why we've been successful, because it really does get down to how we develop relationships with each other, with our membership. And we talk about those realities of, you know, the costs of, you know, pesticides. You know, not only, you know, there are many who do join Arrow and are engaged because of the impact it has on the environment, but they're also really aware of financial, you know, issues surrounding, you know, converting your farm. But then the long-term impact of having to continue to rely on chemical fertilizers and pesticides and government subsidies, you know, and how that threatens, you know, keeping the farm and the family. So we were able to have those conversations in a frank but engaging way, because we aren't, you know, we're not political in that sense. We're very practical and more pop, you know, like a more populist feel.
You know what I was going to ask you when you first started? Are there other organizations like this in other states? Like, is there Arrow Oregon or Arrow Idaho or Arrow New York? Because I saw that your Arrow Montana, when I was Googling it, really stuck out to me. Do you know?
Yeah, there aren't really. We're only a statewide organization, so we're not affiliate of any national organization. Just the brainchild of some energy activists. You know, not just, I guess. We're the brainchild of energy activists, very passionate, forward-thinking people from the 70s. And there are groups that, you know, do similar work. But I think as far as, like, the energy ag overlap, you know, traditionally, I don't think there are a lot of groups that are like Arrow. I think there is a shift, you know, and there's a lot of overlap with other groups, and that people are starting to talk about sustainable communities and resilient communities and thinking about, you know, how we power our communities, how we, you know, travel around in our communities and how we grow and eat our food and that kind of stuff. So there, people are starting to see those broader connections, but yeah, we're not part of any sort of national affiliation.
All right. Well, Montana maybe could be the leaders in that.
Maybe.
Because I just fascinate. Every time I go to your website, I'm more, you know, just excited about what I see. And I just think you're doing a great, and I think you're right. You know, people around the nation are going that way. I talk a lot on my show about the millennials. I just think these millennials are, and you might be a millennial yourself.
I don't know where I was born in 79, so I don't know where I am. But
you're right. Okay. You're right there. They
I'm
said
Carter baby.
Uh-huh. Oh, sweet. I think that too. Or well, I guess I'm younger. I'm a little older than that, but
I can't ever keep up with where that stuff goes. But I know what you mean. Just engaging.
It's right around 1980. It's right around that age group. But I just hear them, you know, they seem very socially conscious and just really positive and caring about the environment more than any other generation. And just, mm-hmm. or maybe not any other generation, but they seem to be concerned about putting that into business. I listen to a lot of millennials who are entrepreneurs and business people for some reason right now. And I really like the way they're going and thinking about things. And I think also technology has brought a lot of that, the way people can communicate mm-hmm. through technology these days. All right, I'm going to be quiet because I know my listeners tell me to be quiet a lot, and I've already said more than I probably should. All right, well, did you want to go into the tour you've been on now?
Sure, that'd be great. I'd love
okay.
to.
Okay, cool.
So I have a new director at Arrow. I've been here for almost a year. Some people say I can still say new, some people say I can't. I'm trying to hang on to like 3 years of new. But as part of being new, I wanted to travel around the state and meet our members and meet people in their communities and just sort of get a feel for myself and for my organization. You know, what are people doing? You know, what are people doing on their own or through a community group to create sustainable communities in Montana? And then, you know, what kind of have conversations about what kind of barriers they're running into. Like, where do they want to go? And, you know, what's standing in their way? Is it financial? Is it capacity? Is it, you know, not even really knowing what the answer is, but just knowing that they want to do something different. And then from there, talking about how Arrow can help. Because like I said, we're very grassroots-based, and all of our programming and all of our work is directed from the grassroots, from our members. So I got to get out there and talk to them and just see, you know, see if I can find some common themes to help us, you know, develop projects and programs around that. But also, I mean, like I mentioned with collaboration, you know, I've been finding that a lot of people are wanting to do some more things but just aren't in contact. So it's, you know, instead of having one person doing the work of 10, I can actually connect 10 people to do the work, which I think is really exciting because there are a lot of people who are so passionate about, you know, creating, you know, healthy, sustainable, economically vibrant communities, but it's overwhelming on your own. And then once you start connecting people and they're able to, you know, do the work that aligns with the work they're already doing and they can work together as this united front to help, you know, create positive, forward-thinking, proactive changes in their community, it doesn't seem as overwhelming, and you can actually get stuff done. So that's what's really exciting for me, is just seeing people get excited about it and connecting them with other folks, or at least beginning those connections, and then, you know, coming up with ideas for programs that we can do to help people move forward.
Okay. Are you going to tell us about the places you've been?
Sure. Yeah, let me... I'm trying to remember everything, but so I have a blog up talking about the tour, and some of the posts I'm just putting up last week and this week are three farms I visited in western Montana. I went to Harlequin Organic Produce. They are growing produce up by Art Lee, and they have a bigger farm than most produce farms in Montana. There's a couple more mid-sized farms. And they've got a really exciting story. They're young farmers in their 20s. And I've been to the Golden Yoke, I guess the other farm. They're opening up a creamery, and they're going to be selling local ice cream made from cows that are on a natural milking cycle. And they're going to be selling it at this little space in St. Ignatius. So when you're on your way up to Flathead, you can get some ice cream or ice cream sandwiches, and I've had some prototypes. They're very delicious. And I went to County Rail Farm, and they're out by Dixon, another young farmers who are growing produce as well. And then I've had some, I've been out to eastern Montana, and I've visited with some farms out there and just and some community members as well. Part of my tour, I'm meeting with other groups, nonprofits or volunteer groups that are working on sustainability issues, and talking with them about what they're doing, and hoping to connect people as well. So I've been to Missoula. We work with the Community Food and Agriculture Coalition, CFAC, out of Missoula. So I've chatted with them about some of the exciting stuff they're doing there, and had community meetings there as well. One of the concerns that they're working on is protecting ag land in Missoula.
Oh.
Keeping it from being developed.
Cool.
I think their tagline, is like, let's keep the ag in our culture, something like that. But they're working specifically in the Missoula area on that issue. They've also got a lot of good program going on with for new farmers, helping new farmers learn more about it and connecting with, you know, mentors and that kind of stuff. People get internships. Yeah, it's pretty exciting. Then I have also been to, I've been up in Hinsdale. There's a woman, a teacher up there. Her name's Patty Armbruster, who's also somebody you should interview. She's fantastic.
Cool.
She's an FFA teacher, and she's just built this really dynamic garden up in Hinsdale, and it's just engaging the kids and growing food and getting it, you know, in their own cafeteria, and you know, teaches other teachers how to do a similar program in their school. And she's just really, really passionate about growing local food. And in that area is a food desert region, as many of our communities in Montana. And if anyone doesn't know what that means, I'm not sure quite of the actual number of miles, but when there's people have to travel a pretty long way to get to a food source, whether it's a grocery store, even a gas station, I think would be included. The USDA has defined those areas as food deserts. And Montana has, I think, over 30 counties that have food deserts in them. So the Highline in eastern Montana region, you know, it's so geographically large. For some people, getting access to food, let alone healthy local food, is a big barrier, a very real barrier. So Patty's been working with teaching kids on how to grow organically, and how plants work with each other to fight off pests and that kind of stuff. And it's really, really charming. She's got just bees up there too. It's really great.
Okay, I just got to say something quick about food desert, because I've talked a few times about Kalispell actually having food deserts, and I because the thing that kills me the most is that intersection where, like, there's Home Depot, and now there's Cabela's there, and then there's those huge apartments there and the car dealership, and it's this huge section. How could they not put a grocery store there? Because the school is right there. They've just built this huge high school. There's like 1,000 kids going to that school. And where do those kids get to go to get food? There's, you know, the fast food restaurant, McDonald's is the closest place. They can practically walk right to McDonald's. There is a brand new Naturals health food store, but I don't see them going there in that mall, to be honest with you. Kids from Kalispell High School, maybe a few of them go there, but it's not even convenient. You know, they've got to cross a giant highway. I know a lot of them drive to that school, but to me, that's a food desert right there. There's all those people in those apartments. There's tons of new places going up around that corner and down. And so that's like an example of food desert. And it's not really miles. I mean, Albertsons or something's probably, you know, a mile away, but with traffic on a lunch area, you know, and then there's a Forest Service place right there. Then all the people that there is a Walmart, I guess, that sells food, but you know, so that just an example of a food desert. I think that's right in a major city very close to us. Sorry.
Yeah. Food access. No, it's a really good point. And food access is a really big issue. And one of our programs that we're have right now is, our membership have identified that they need help in growing regional food networks. And so there's a lot of layers with this, but basically, at least with our farmers, it's just growing their own markets, growing their own supply chains to meet the market. So it's developing those relationships so they can we can have more access to local food in our communities. So with our program, with that, we are working with individual communities to develop community action groups to, you know, for example, Kalispell could have one. And they, you know, folks would get together and talk about all their food access issues in their communities, you know, and maybe set, you know, this big dynamic goal of, you know, 75% of all food eaten in California will be grown locally, but then identify, you know, the steps that it would take to get there. And this community group could say, you know, part of your, like, focus areas could be, well, if we're going to grow local food systems, you know, one, we want to have local food in the schools and at least access to the schools. And part of that could be, you know, just looking at what exists right now. And when the situation you're talking about, you know, that's a really important conversation to have, you know, for kiddos to have access to healthy local food. Because if it's not in the school, where are they going to get it? You know, even if there is a natural food store, are they, do they have a deli, you know, or anything like that? And so that community group get together and talk about ways to overcome that, you know, that food access gap that you've just identified, whether it be, it could be anything, you know, a farm to with food truck. You know, some folks are talking about that. That's something that's happening in the community. Maybe there'd be a volunteer group. You develop a food partnership and you work with farmers and you have a food truck that comes out around lunchtime out in front of the high school, and the kids can get, you know, local veggie sandwiches, local, you know, any sort of local meat sandwiches, salads that have been prepared. Or maybe the school eventually gets a school garden where the kids can grow and harvest the food and sell it to help support the garden. I mean, there are so many skills they learn there besides cooking and eating well. You know, you've got balancing a budget, you've got running a business. There's really great opportunities to kind of think outside the box in order to not only create healthy local food options, but have it align with what people are already doing, you know, and it can align well with the curriculum.
Oh, awesome. Just so many spectacular things. That would be way fun. And it reminds me of, so the guy who got me into podcasting, his name is John Lee Dumas, and he's like big in the podcasting world, but his new product he's just about to come out with is this journal. He calls it the Freedom Journal. And it's like 100 days to, whatever, achieving your goal. Like, it's like this journal that walks you through it, and just, you have so many awesome, just easy to focus on goal steps there and things for people. I can hear the listeners' minds churning how this can work in their community. And you know, and actually one of the ways I connected with you that reminded me was I can't think of her last name, but Laura used to volunteer at Arrow or work there. She started as a volunteer and then eventually was hired there. And she lives in Kalispell now.
Okay.
But I can't think of her last name. But she was a guest, and that kind of is how I ended up connecting with you. And I was like, oh, that's where our license plate's from. And that's when I went to the website. Kind of a long, funny way. I'll put the link to her.
That's how it works.
Her interview in the show notes for listeners to check out. But yeah, so great ideas and just tons of things. And I like that a lot. And my husband, I was an elementary school teacher for almost 10 years now. And just took last year off to kind of start the podcast. I'm kind of changing my journey. But I'm very big on gardens in the schools. And like, I've thought a lot, I've told my husband, I'm like, even if you just provided the potatoes and carrots to the school in Eureka here, I would think that could be a business, you know, just if they were getting, if you could just grow all those for you. I don't know how the school would figure out how to store them, if we would have to store them, or if they would ever do anything. But to me, just potatoes and carrots are big things that schools use, you know, things like solutions like that are just, I don't know. Anyway, I'm going to let you go back to talking.
Well, I also have taught elementary school.
Oh, you did?
In the past, just briefly, but I taught lower elementary school special education. And, I loved talking about, you know, we had little plants, you know, growing in our classroom just because my capacity, you know, we didn't have a garden quite yet, but we would have plants growing in the classroom, and I would always incorporate, you know, that into my lessons. And because there's one, being an elementary school teacher, I mean, there's so many things you have to teach and so many, you know, core standards that you have to teach. I really felt like I loved how working with food, you know, whether it would be cooking food or growing plants would, you know, you could kind of hit everything. You're following directions, you're doing math, you're reading, you're explaining
science.
Things. There's so much science. I mean, science is so great. But there's so much overlap in everything. And the kids are, especially for me, working with special ed kids, it just helps so much to have I think in elementary school in general, actually, just to have their hands on something and really having something tangible to understand until they really get a good command of reading and literacy. I think it's critical to be doing something manual like that, and just gardening and cooking provide a really great, fun way to teach kids just so much stuff.
And they love it.
They love it. You know, that's, you know, and then with this farm to school, I'm on a farm to school steering committee, the statewide farm to school steering committee. And when we hear stories back from teachers, you know, talking about kids, you know, learning about beets and, you know, what them, you know, if they're growing them and then eating them and they actually like to eat them, especially when, you know, and I'm talking about gardens from garbage again, you know, Mike has told me, you know, the kids, when they put all the effort into it and they see, you know, this, what they did, and they're so proud of themselves, and they eat, you know, beets, and they love them, you know, because they know that they did that, and it's pretty powerful.
And they taste so much better that it's like it doesn't taste anything like a beet you would get at the store, or canned beets, which is probably what comes in the school lunch if they ever put beets in there. A couple other things I just have to say really quick is I'm pretty sure the special ed people in Eureka at the high school put in a greenhouse, and they're doing a lot of projects like that here. And then I've had two other guests, both from New York, that have one was Elizabeth Leonard from Earl's Kitchen Gardens, and she goes into schools and builds gardens with the schools. And then also these girls, Alethea and Aaron, who are two of my, they were just the funnest guests. They run a CSA, but they also, they do something with kids with, or adults kind of, with disabilities types, or not necessarily disabilities, I forget what they called it, but, and how it helps just people connect with, it has something to do with dancing, I think, and connecting with the earth, and just really giving people an ability to form relationships in the garden, and using nature to improve quality of life, I think.
Absolutely.
But also, somebody was talking to me about kids with autism can sit in a garden and just be like at peace where they can't be that way in the classroom, and just the huge difference it can make for a kid to just be calmed and feel, I think it was Elizabeth Leonard that was talking about it, and just how much of an impact. And then certainly my experience is working both at Head Start and then in elementary schools, there's just not enough recess. Like, I would just go crazy. For 2 years I was the PE teacher in the afternoon, and I did reading and math in the morning. Just, I'm in a community with a huge diabetes problem, just giant diabetes population. And meanwhile, I got the kids, kindergartners, for 16 hours a year, 16 hours a year total. Meanwhile, they went to the computer for 48 hours during my time was split with them. I got them for 20 minutes, like twice a week. And then they went to the computer 4 days a week for the other 20 minutes. And then the library was one of the things. And just, you know, if they could have that outdoor active time working in a garden. And then, like you said, the curriculum, you know, there's like no science in the curriculums anymore. Meanwhile, we desperately need engineers and a love of science. And I think, like you said, there's so much math, there's so much reading, there's so much expression, writing that you can get out of being in a garden and working.
Yeah, just that there's something about the hands-on, you know, like it's just not the same. Like, kids just remember it better. So that's just like one, and like I said, one of the cool projects that we're doing is helping develop these regional food networks. So we're getting people connected so that way they can, you know, start identifying projects in their community that they want to do to create more sustainable communities, whether it's around food or whether it's around renewable energy, you know. And then, you know, from there, you know, getting those communities to get together regionally once a year at a minimum to just say, what are you working on? You know, is there a way we can work together? Because especially when you're talking about growing a local food system, you need to have those regional conversations. And especially if you're trying to help farmers, you know, grow their supply chains, you know, you need that regional connection to figure out, okay, how are we going to get the food to and from? And then how are we going to work with institutions or, you know, grocery stores or restaurants to meet their demand with local food.
Because a lot of times they say, you know, the biggest thing I've heard from, you know, grocery store, I got to say, I haven't really actually ever gone to a restaurant, but is that, you know, they want consistency and, you know, they need to be able to get it all year round. And so they're not really as interested in growing, you know, buying from local farmers because, you know, our season's so short here in Montana. So probably you're addressing those conversations. And then you got me curious now about like what kind of alternative energy projects are going on in Montana. Like I noticed in the paper, they've been talking a lot about Flathead Electric just came out with a new program about solar panels. Right. I was going to try to reach out to them and see if I could get them to talk about that a little. And then,
yeah, you definitely,
you know,
great to see it.
Curious about, you know, we have such a difference between the west side and the east side, and that whole landscape is so different over there. And then, I was going to ask you about the mining thing, that the coal that's kind of coming through the Obama administration lately, and I think our governor's not so happy about it.
Yeah, he's not happy about the Clean Power Plan. Or I think he might be better now. I actually shouldn't speak for the governor, but at first they changed the Clean Power Plan requirements for Montana significantly from the draft. Significantly. And I don't know if DEQ has actually put up a white policy. They had a paper on the previous rules on the Clean Power Plan, but I don't think they've had a chance to, unless they've had a chance to update it since the final rules came out.
But are you coming up with other alternatives besides coal in Montana, like other things? Like, is that part of what you've been...
Arrows had a limited focus on policy. Mm-hmm. It's more so in kind of keeping up on what's going on and then sharing that information with our membership and encouraging them to apply or to respond and to comment and to show up to the legislature, because, you know, that's really who the legislators need to hear from. So, mm-hmm. like during the 2015 legislative session, I engaged at a, you know, very minimum in with the net metering laws, which are net metering is a way that when people have a solar system, if they use less than the energy they generated, they can sell it back to the utility, mm-hmm. and the utility, you know, buys it from them to put on their own grid, their own energy source, mm-hmm. one of their energy sources to sell out. And so our net metering laws haven't been updated since the 90s, so we're trying to find ways to expand it to let people have either a bigger system or if they have, you know, a solar panel, but they, you know, tap into the grid for their irrigation system, if they could transfer some of that credits, you know, share that meter was another one, and then community net metering was another one as well. And none of those passed out of the legislature, unfortunately, but they're doing a study bill on net metering and what that could look like. So hopefully they'll get a lot out of that and we can have some greater opportunities for people.
What about solar panels in Montana? Are the if people are concerned about, like, do we have enough sunny day? I know on the east side, certainly they probably have mm-hmm. enough sunny days, but what about on the west side? Or do you have any information about that if listeners are curious? Or,
well, yeah, we have some installers, you know, are our membership, but you know, it really just depends. I mean, they're not, you know, necessarily like going to be a sole energy source. You know, like I said, with the net metering, the way it goes is if you use more, you're still connected to the grid, you know, whether it's the co-op or Northwestern Energy. But if you, you know, if you have a windmill, for example, and the wind doesn't blow, one of our farmers has a windmill on his farms, and he typically doesn't pay an energy bill. But once in a while, if it's not very windy and the windmill doesn't blow, he has to get energy off the grid. So it does vary, but there is a lot of potential, at least to have it supplement, you know, to cut energy costs. Mm-hmm. But it does vary by state.
Mm-hmm. And I would think it's going to grow as, you know, wind technology's got to be improving drastically, and it just seems like you guys, there's definite wind on the east side.
Oh, there's, yeah, I mean, the wind potential for the state is incredible.
Okay.
You know, it's just nice to have, you know, we really believe in small-scale distributed energy systems, you know, not putting all of our energy in one, you know, coal-fired power plant, for example. I mean, it's a finite resource, you know, that we just think people should have more options, you know, and cleaner options. And, you know, it's a diversified system of solar and wind. You know, know, and geothermal, you know, that kind of stuff.
Okay. Okay. What else did you want to talk about? Anything else? I mean, we're cruising right along.
Yeah, great. This has been great. What I'm really excited about with, why I love Arrow and why I was thrilled to work here is that I really believe that Arrow does really bring programs to people that they want, that helps people think outside the box and are very forward thinking, but proactive. And I've been traveling around the state, you know, talking to folks, hearing about what they're doing. And I love making connections and encouraging collaboration and being a piece of that, you know, being a resource hub for people to know what's going on across the state and connecting folks so that way they can share resources, do the work more efficiently, and have fun doing it because they're, you know, able to do it with other people who think the same way. And these community action groups that we're helping start vary across, you know, we have a couple kind of going on their own, and we've got one in Helena where I'm working with a group, you know, it's some citizens, but it's also, we've got some state agencies, No Kid Hungry is engaged, United Way, Helena Food Share, DPHHS, and we've got all these food people, you know, connected to Carroll College talking about how we're going to grow our local food system in Helena. And that's really exciting because it all just started with some conversations, and then we started talking about what people are already doing, you know, in their agencies or, you know, with their nonprofit. And we're currently working on a plan to set long-term goals for growing the local food system in Helena in a way that aligns with the work that everyone's already doing. So it's not like we're creating another group or another meeting. It's like I said before, you know, you don't have one person doing the work of 10. You have 10 people, you know, doing the work. And it's really fun and really exciting. And it's just got a lot of momentum behind it. So and we've got a couple other communities we're talking with. Livingston's got something going similar. And it's just really exciting. And so I would, if members are interested in that kind of collaboration, you know, that's something that we can, you know, help with, you know, at some point in the future, is getting those folks together, helping facilitate that conversation, setting goals, and then letting people run with it. You know, whether it's growing local food or if it's, you know, creating a fundraising for solar panels on the food bank, you know, or, you know, whatever it could look like. The sky's the limit.
Okay, two questions. How does somebody become a member? And then I'd be like remiss if I didn't. My husband's really interested in biodiesel. Is there any of that kind of thing going on?
There's a lot of conversations about biodiesel, but we currently don't have a lot. We're not focusing on that in particular right now. Our Arrow's focus has always been conservation first, energy efficiency first, and then we talk about growing electrons or you know, different fuel systems. But, I mean, there's definitely information out there. I would encourage them to connect with MSU. And then also one of our farmers, Bob Quinn of Camille Organics, got a really neat thing going on where he I can't remember exactly what oil he creates, but he makes his oil that he sells to, I believe, some schools on his university. And when they're done with it, he takes that spent fuel back and treats it and then runs 20% of his tractors on that biodiesel.
Cool.
I love that concept.
You know, I guess my husband, he's interested because he has a backhoe that runs on diesel. And, you know, he would love to have his, if he had a diesel, you know, he's always looking for a pickup that he could run. And then my personal thing is like, so when I was teaching in Browning, you know, they're such a big district. There's, you know, 10, 12, I don't know how many school buses lined up at the end of the day. And we would, you know, we walked the kids out there and it just, the stink. I just thought this is just awful for the bus drivers sitting on the buses, breathing it all in. All of us, the teachers out there breathing it in, the kids standing out there, you know, because sometimes the bus would be late coming from the high school at the end of the day. And just how much, and it just seemed to me if there was a better way for those school buses to run, and it just,
you know,
there's all the agricultural land right there. And Jackie, so that's where a lot of my interest comes from.
And that's exactly one of a project that we could help a community plan to do. Like if that's what, like I said, if we're trying to create sustainable communities and we can set these big goals, but if that's like one project, how can we change our buses and get them to run, on biodiesel instead of diesel? How can we help convert that system, whatever it looks like? And that's something that we could help get, people connected and get the right people at the table and plan on how to do that. Maybe using, I can't remember what you said his name was, but that planning guy, the Freedom magazine, whatever.
Oh, the Freedom Journal?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right.
But, we have our own tools, but we can help develop tools to set goals and make sure we engage the right people to help make that project, that kind of project happen. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that we like to do. But I would also encourage your husband to come to the farm tour at Kamut Organic on the Friday of our annual meeting, because he could learn a lot there and ask a lot of good questions.
Mm-hmm. The biggest biodiesel project, I think, in the United States is actually, I want to say, the buses in Las Vegas, like in Nevada, somewhere in Nevada. There's like this bus system. They have like 300, I don't know. I'll have to look. I wrote a blog post about it last fall, when school was starting last fall, that I can put the link to in the show notes. But I'm pretty sure that, one of the biggest biodiesel projects in the United States is a school bus down in Nevada.
Hi.
It was Laura Behenna. No wonder I forgot her last name, because that's kind of
okay.
That worked at Arrow. It might have been quite a while ago.
I got engaged with Arrow as a volunteer, and I moved to Montana. I'm from Indiana originally. I moved to Montana from Mecor Vista, and I volunteered at Arrow because I have my academic background as an environmental issues, and I helped with it's around 2007, 2006. Arrow drafted the blueprint for homegrown energy, and I helped work with that, helped edit, and did a little piece on debunking the myth that renewables don't create jobs, which is something that needs to be debunked. But so I have a little bit of and when we talk about biodiesel in that document as well. I feel like you asked me another question. I can't remember what it was.
It was, how does somebody become a member?
Oh, great. Good question. you can sign up online at www.aeromt.org and click on one of our buttons, the license plate. It'll say donate, I believe it says. And then you can sign up online, or if you want to send in a membership, our starting memberships are $40 for an individual, but feel free to give a little more. We're happy to take it and help us do our good work. And that, our address is 432 North Last Chance Gulch, Helena, Montana, 59601. Phone number is 406-443-7272. And your listeners can call anytime if they have any questions, if they want to know more specifics. But the membership gets you engage with Arrow, helping support a grassroots nonprofit that is creating sustainable communities. And you do get a discount to the annual meeting and any other events we have, which is a perk. And you get a connection to a really cool group of people. Really cool group of people. Big family.
Yes. That's my favorite part about podcasting. I feel like I'm meeting my real peeps. Finally, like last week, I finally met somebody who was my guest. I think she was like guest number 23. And last week, we finally hooked up down in Kalispell, and it was just so fun to meet that person in real life. And so I found my little thing. So it's the Clark County School District in Nevada uses biodiesel for 1,300 buses that transports 246,000 students in 266 schools. I get it off of the EPA website. Mm-hmm. Off of waste grease. That's how they're getting their biodiesel. So definitely, I would encourage everybody to join Arrow and get the license plates, because they're so pretty. I get compliments on my license plates all the time.
Yeah, they are really great. I have them as well. I just think they're, thank you. I didn't design them, but I think I do love them. I think they're very charming. Yeah, when you get the license plates, we get we do get a donation from that. So thank you for that.
Yeah. All right. Anything else?
No, I guess I would just say if folks, I really encourage you to come to our annual meeting and our expo, 2015 expo and annual meeting at the Arrow Peak Lodge outside of Great Falls. If you want to know about the agenda, it's you can look it up on our website, www.aeromt.org/expo, E-X-P-O. But if you do have any questions, feel free to call us directly at 406-443-7272. And thank you so much. This was fun.
Thank you. Thank you for, I know you're super busy and it was hard for us to finally connect. And I'm so glad you came on and shared this wealth of knowledge. And I hope you'll come back and we'll do the regular gardening one.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, and then thank you for your flexibility and just traveling around Montana. Makes my schedule a little weird this summer, but I want to do it in the summer and not in the winter.
All right, I got to give one more shout out to my other favorite podcasters, the Montana Road Tripping Girls. Have I not talked about them on the show yet? I don't know. I think I sent you an email once and said, you got to check these girls out while you're driving around. But they're out of Bozeman, Dia and Jules, and they have the best road trip. I don't care where you live. This one's a fun one to listen to, especially the one about Glacier Park. And I learned the most important thing. I never knew how to use my bear spray. Learned how to use my bear spray on their show. But also, I mean, they just talk about fun things. They'll teach you about things in Montana that you never knew and just get you excited to take a road trip anywhere. So you shout out to Dee and Jules, Montana Road Tripping. Another fun podcast when you're in your car. Okay, thank you so much, Jennifer, and have a wonderful day.
Thanks, Jackie. You too.
Hi, listeners. Jennifer sent me an email afterwards that just wanted me to let you know on Friday evening, September 11th, 2015, at 5:15 p.m., Arrow is going to be holding an event in Kalispell at the Purple Frog Gardens. And I'll post information about that on the show notes page. So if you're interested in checking out Arrow in person, and I'll try to be there at the Purple Frog Gardens Friday, September 11th at 5:15 p.m. in Kalispell. We'd love to see you there. Thanks. I also want to remind everybody to enter our August coloring contest. If you haven't done so already, there's a link on our website to the coloring contest page that I made where you just draw a picture of you in your garden. It doesn't you don't have to use the coloring page I made. You can just draw a picture of you in your garden. Or mostly, you know, have a neighbor kid or your kids or grandkids or somebody draw a picture of you and then submit it to organicgardenerpodcast@gmail.com or just orgpodcast@gmail.com is probably easier. That's orgpodcast@gmail.com. And like I said, there's a link on our website, the August Coloring Contest. It ends August 31st, so we'd love to see your submission. Thanks, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to visit our website at organicgardenerpodcast.com. That's just organicgardenerpodcast.com. And it will link right to the show notes and all that we've talked about on today's show. If you like what you've heard today, we'd love it if you would head over to iTunes and give us a hopefully 5-star review. It really helps us get found and share the knowledge with other listeners. Thanks again for listening, and remember to grow.